tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump is waging a war of words this weekend over U.S. professional athletes who refuse to stand before games for the playing of the country's national anthem, saying they should be fired and suggesting that fans should boycott the games in protest of the players. Those players have waged a protest for what they see as disparities in the treatments of minorities in the country and Trump's own divisive comments about U.S. race relations, especially after he equated neo-Nazi demonstrators with counter-protesters after a rally last month in Charlottesville, Virginia. There were some verbal fireworks at the U.N. General Assembly when North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho said President Trump's mentally deranged.
The U.S. policy and nuclear threats have continued for over 70 years, and these have led to the situation on the Korean Peninsula to a touch-and-go point. But in the United Nations, unjustifiable resolutions which illegalize justice as injustice are randomly adopted due to the high-handedness of the U.S.
China's Earthquake Administration said a quake in North Korea Saturday was not a nuclear blast, after saying earlier that the 3.4 magnitude quake detected was a suspected explosion. Meantime, China announced Saturday that it will limit exports of petroleum products to North Korea to comply with the United Nations Security Council sanctions on the North's nuclear and missile development programs. The Chinese Commerce Ministry said in a statement on its website, exports of refined petroleum to Pyongyang will be limited to 2 million barrels a year. Effective October 1st, it says sales of liquefied natural gas will be banned immediately. This is VOA News. Germans go to the polls this Sunday in an election that will likely result in a fourth term for Chancellor Angela Merkel. But it could also see the first time for a far-right party becoming part of the Bundestag since the end of World War II.
The AfD will indeed be the first right-wing radical party who will make it into the federal parliament. Although, if you look at the history since 1949, we already had other right-wing radical parties on the regional level in different parliaments. But indeed, at the federal level, this would be the first time since the Second World War.
That's analyst Paul Matuszek. Support for Miracle Center Right Christian Democrat Party is currently at 34%, but the far-right Alternative for Germany Party is showing more support than 5% of the vote required to get a seat in the multi-party Bundestag. A suicide bomber has struck a NATO convoy in the Afghan capital, Kabul, injuring at least three people. The Ministry of Interior described the injured as Afghan civilians, but would not say whether foreign forces suffered any casualties at all. The Taliban insurgency has taken credit for the plotting of the suicide bombing. There is a tremendous support for a referendum in Iraqi Kurdistan, and nearly a million people are registered to vote. There have been huge rallies leading up to the ballot, including one Friday night that local media reported drew a crowd of 40,000 people. A powerful earthquake rocked Mexico Saturday, killing at least two people and triggering new alarms in the country already struggling to recover from two recent quakes that killed a total of about 400 people. One resident describes the experience.
Everyone is scared. Despite receiving a lot of support from citizens with regards to shelters full of food, support from young people, people removing rubble, we're scared. And we see that homes and buildings collapse, that people were hurt and died. We're all scared.
The U.S. Geological Survey says that the new quake had a magnitude of 6.1 and was centered in the southern state, about 360 kilometers southeast of Mexico City. Western leaders have reacted to Iran's announcement Saturday that it had made and successfully tested a new medium-range ballistic missile. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted Saturday, Iran just test-fired a ballistic missile capable of reaching Israel. They are also working with North Korea. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The issue here is that any proposal for any action against anybody in the ANC is usually requested through the structures of the African National Congress.
A South African minister calls on the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, to discipline President Jacob Zuma.
It is true that the ruling party cadres attacked our members in a constituency where we had a recent local government by-election.
The Zambian main opposition party condemns attacks on its supporters.
Always require the United States to support it. And we are very, very privileged that the U.S. now is working very hard to try to help South Sudan to be able to be on foot in terms of bringing the peace.
And South Sudan says it enjoys good relations with the United States despite recent sanctions. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The South African Minister for Housing has called on the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, to discipline President Jacob Zuma for allegedly bringing the party into disrepute. Lindiwe Sisulu says a report presented at the ANC's policy conference in July found that scandals surrounding the president is causing tensions and disquiet within the party. Some members of the ANC have called for Zuma to step down in recent months following a series of corruption scandals. For reaction, I reach Lindiwe Sisulu, the South African Minister for Small Business Development in the capital, Pretoria.
Well, the issue here is that any proposal for any action against anybody in the ANC is usually requested through the structures of the African National Congress. And we've been through this issue of the president and for a very long time. All the time issues which are of concern by any member of the ANC in relation to the president has always been discussed, either at a branch level or even discussed at the National Executive Committee of the ANC, which is one of the highest decision-making structures of the ANC outside of conference. And therefore, if anyone feels there is a need for any action that needs to be taken, the most respectful way of doing it, quite frankly, is to go back to the structures of the ANC and make that proposal and let that be tested through the ANC and not being tested through public statements, quite frankly.
Opponents are saying that her statement undermines President Zuma's authority, not only as the president, but as a prominent leader of the ANC. Some are also saying that she should be fired for making such a statement. Personally, what is your assessment?
Many of us who still believe and will continue to believe in the structures of the ANC will take that matter within the ANC. Because really, when you are a president of a country and you are the head of state, and you have your ministers who are also responsible to respond to you as a president. And when ministers then go around making those kind of statements, it is a fact that it undermines the president in office. And that issue for me is not about the president, the current president. It's also about setting a wrong precedent, even for any other president that would come into place. Because once you are a president, you expect that all your ministers would respond. If they have an issue with you, they would come directly to you and have a conversation with you. And this president that I know, that I've worked with this long, has never been a president that does not allow people to come and bring their issues to him for discussion.
Supporters of President Zuma are calling on Ms. Lindiwe Sisulu to step down. Others are saying President Zuma is showing transparency by allowing some of these things to occur. What do you say to that?
Well, the fact of the matter is that anyone who's calling for the president to remove Minister Sisulu is really not correct. The president would never remove any minister or on the basis of just statements like that. For the president that I know, it would have to be something way bigger. I know, as a matter of fact, that in cases of such an incident, the president will simply just have a conversation with the minister concerned. What the biggest problem is about when we go out of our own structures and not raise those issues within the structures, because at the end of the day, then even the president is now put under a very difficult situation where he has to go around answering to such questions, whereas we could have a discussion within the structures of the ANC about such a matter. And I think that my view is still, even if the statement has still been made, again, it will be discussed in the structures of the ANC.
What do you make of those who are calling for his removal from office, impeachment? The opposition and a few ANC parliamentarians have made some moves to try to impeach him from office. What do you make of that effort? He has survived so far.
You are already saying the few, because the ANC, as I said earlier on, is a democratic organization. When we have concerns, we bring them into the structures and we discuss them. And if the structures come to a conclusion, which should be the majority of the structures coming to a conclusion, that something like this should happen, it would have happened a long time ago. This debate about the removal of the president has been going on and on, as there's been 8 attempts in parliament, and all the time those attempts have failed. And those attempts have failed simply on the basis that the majority of the ANC members at whatever level still believe in the president being the president. And by the way, the conference of the ANC is coming this December, which will be the 54th conference of the ANC, which is an electoral conference. And there, members of the African National Congress will elect a new leader, because again, we are a democratic institution. Once we have a constitution as an organization, and therefore even now, democracy within the ANC will play out as we elect a new president. And then after that, we've got elections in 2019, and again, a new president of the country will be elected through the African National Congress.
Lindiwe Zulu is the South African Minister for Small Business Development. She spoke with me from Pretoria. The Zambian main opposition party, the United Party for National Development, or UPND, has condemned the attack of its supporters in the capital, Lusaka, by alleged partisans from the ruling Patriotic Front Party, or PF. The UPND called for the arrest of the masterminds of the attack. The remarks came after the party also called for peace and unity based on respect for the rule of law and order, as well as respect for human rights and freedoms. For more, I read Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the UPND in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Yes, it is true that the ruling party cadres attacked our members in a constituency where we had a recent local government by-election. And they targeted the family that hosted us, who provided their house for campaigns. And they brutally attacked them, hacked the husband, and beat up the wife and the children and the other members that were in the vicinity. But this is coming at a time when the Commonwealth has tried to intervene in the Zambian political crisis to facilitate a dialogue, one of its objectives is to force it end political violence. But the ruling party is not moved by that. They are continuing with their political violence as a strategy.
Have the police told the UPND about any possible investigation into this attack?
Well, the police spokesperson just issued a statement and underplaying the whole thing. They said it is a group of people that were just fighting at a bar. That, of course, is not true, because we have evidence on camera picked up by some independent television stations showing that these people were attacked at their home and some of the things were looted at their home. It can't be a bar fight, but that is the police, because they're siding with the ruling party and they don't want to take any action. No one has been arrested despite the ringleader of the PF gang being identified, but he has not been arrested.
What is the UPND doing to help with the mediation efforts by the Commonwealth to help stem the tide of political violence in Zambia?
Well, we've committed ourselves to this dialogue process, and we are providing information or evidence about what is transpiring about and has transpired in the past about political violence in Zambia. We hope that with that evidence, we can prove that the people that cause violence in Zambia are the ruling party and nobody else. And we hope that the ruling party will swallow its pride or indeed abandon this strategy of political violence, because it is creating a source of potential chaos in our country.
Charles, what do you say to some supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party in your strongholds, where some allegations have been made of your cadres or supporters attacking PF supporters in those areas?
Well, we have from time to time appealed to our supporters. We've sent messages that we should refrain from political violence. We should embark on peace, and that is what will convince people that we are different from those who are causing violence. And we have demonstrated that whenever there is no violence in by-election or indeed an election, we always train to do better. So political violence doesn't help us.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the Zambian main opposition party, the United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from Lusaka. South Sudan says it enjoys good relations with the United States despite recent sanctions imposed by the administration in Washington on three South Sudanese individuals for fueling the conflict and obstructing the work of aid workers. U.S. President Donald Trump expressed concerns at the United Nations General Assembly over the conflict in South Sudan, saying he will dispatch Ambassador Nikki Haley, the U.S. permanent representative to the U.N., to spearhead peace effort in the troubled regions of Africa. For VOA, Nabil Biagio has more from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
Ambassador Maiwenn McCall, a spokesman for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says his country appreciates the role played by the U.S. government to end the conflict in South Sudan. President Trump spoke forcefully about South Sudan on the sidelines of the 72nd session of the U.N. General Assembly on Wednesday.
We're closely monitoring and deeply disturbed by the ongoing violence in South Sudan and in the Congo. Millions of lives are at risk, and we continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But real results in halting this catastrophe will require an African-led peace process and the sincere, really sincere commitment of all parties involved.
The U.S. president told African leaders that millions of lives are at risk in the continent and that the U.S. will continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But an Africa-led process is needed to bring an end to conflicts in troubled parts of Africa. Juba-based political science lecturer James O'Cook says Mr. Trump's remarks underscore the tension in U.S.-South Sudanese relations.
For the first time, we heard from Trump himself on conflict and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, and his comment was very negative. It tells you his administration is not happy with the situation in South Sudan.
O'Cook says President Trump's remarks are a sign that the U.S. is willing to work more closely with Uganda and Ethiopia to stop the conflict in South Sudan.
They are spending money and the war is not ending. And that makes them a bit nervous. And that's why they want the African countries, starting from the African Union and the regional bloc like they got, to put more effort to end the war, and also to urge the warring parties to commit themselves to peace more than this escalation of war.
Ambassador McCall chose to put U.S.-South Sudanese relations in a different light.
It is true that the effort that the government is doing here to bring peace always requires the United States to support it. And we are very, very privileged that the U.S. now is working very hard to try to help South Sudan. to be able to be on foot in terms of bringing the peace.
McCall says his government has always been committed to strengthening its ties with the U.S. government in the Trump administration and in the Obama administration.
U.S.-South Sudan relations is a very important relation and is strategic. And so we need support from the United States more than anything else. And for us to be able to stand, we are a new country. And we came to be a country because U.S. has helped.
But McCall admits U.S.-South Sudanese relations could be better. He says the Trump administration should reconsider the sanctions imposed on a senior South Sudanese minister, a defense official, and a former army chief.
We urge the United States to just, you know, review the sanctions and try to come up with better help rather than sanctions.
Okuk says if Juba wants to improve relations with the U.S., South Sudanese leaders must stop the war and restore peace throughout the country.
You have to stop the violence and improve the humanitarian situation. And then the people can return to South Sudan. Then after that, U.S. can have a different approach to South Sudan.
Earlier this week, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security extended temporary protection status for South Sudanese who wish to remain in the U.S. Temporary protection status is a program for citizens of countries undergoing instability and are residing in the U.S. on a visa. Mr. Trump says he will soon dispatch his U.N. envoy, Nikki Haley, to spearhead efforts to try to end the conflicts in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The United Nations is calling for a stop to the attacks against people with albinism for body parts, a thriving for-profit business practice worldwide, but in particular in sub-Saharan Africa. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva, where discussions are being held at the UN Human Rights Council.
Persons with albinism, an inherited condition that affects the pigment of skin and hair, sometimes are victims of witchcraft. They are attacked, mutilated, and even killed in the belief their body parts can bring wealth and good luck. Ikponwosa Ero is the UN's independent expert on human rights of persons with albinism. She says the abhorrent lucrative practice thrives mainly in Tanzania, Mozambique, and Mali. She tells VOA she has documented close to 800 cases of attacks against persons with albinism in the past decade in sub-Saharan Africa.
Those are reported cases alone. Most cases are not reported because most cases involve family members or people known to the victim. The Red Cross reported that the body parts were valued on a black market, like an arm was valued at $2,000 and a complete corpse at between about $75,000. So there's profits to be made even though you don't believe in witchcraft.
Tanzanian Mariama Stafford survived an attack one decade ago when she was 25 years old. Speaking through an interpreter, she tells VOA she was sleeping in her home when four people came in and attacked her with machetes.
One of those four people was a neighbor. And he is the one who took the machete and was cutting my arms. He cut my right arm first and threw it to the accomplices. And then later on, he chopped off my left arm.
Stafford says there should be stringent laws against any person who attacks people with albinism. She says she also would like to see the government take away licenses to practice from witch doctors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An international team of researchers has identified for the first time six genes that determine the length of pregnancy and whether a baby is born preterm. Preterm birth is a major cause of infant death and disability. Now, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, scientists may have clues about preventing prematurity.
15 million babies around the world are born too soon every year. They struggle to breathe, and too many of them die. Those who survive can face complications from prematurity throughout their lives. Now, at last, scientists may have found some clues to what causes this complex disorder. In the largest-to-date DNA analysis, an international team of researchers looked at the genetic makeup of 50,000 pregnant women. They found 6 genes that seemed to determine how long a baby would stay in the mother's womb. Dr. Louis Moglia coordinated the study. He's the chief investigator of the March of Dimes Prematurity Research Center in Ohio, and he specializes in the care of preemies at Cincinnati Children's Hospital.
For the first time, we have the clues that are going to lead us to rational ways of understanding a woman's risk for preterm birth.
Muglia says scientists have known for a long time that preterm birth involves a combination of genetic and environmental factors. One of the newly identified genes is involved in how the body uses selenium, a mineral found in soil, seafood, and meat. Another finding is that the cells that line the uterus play a larger-than-expected role in the length of pregnancy. This study also showed that the genes which seem to be responsible for the timing of birth were from the mother.
For the first time, we have an idea of what tissue in the mom is the one that's likely driving the risk for preterm birth.
Stacy Stewart, president of the March of Dimes, hailed the study.
Well, we think this is an important breakthrough in finding solutions to end premature birth, which is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 0 and 5 and the leading cause of disabilities for babies.
The March of Dimes helped fund the study. The study doesn't provide any immediate solutions for stopping preterm birth, but the discoveries may unlock new ways to prevent this disorder. For their analysis, the researchers only tested women of European descent. The U.S. researchers compared their findings to data from 3 different studies in Finland, Denmark, and Norway. Everything pointed to the same 6 genes. The next step is to expand the research to include women from other races and ethnic origins. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a 3-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania. Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the Road with Shaka, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information. This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports. For that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Kenya has been stripped of the right to host the 2018 African Nation Champion, CHAN, following a Confederation of African Football Executive Committee meeting in Accra. The decision was announced at a media conference after a one-day meeting headed by CAF's President Ahmed. The 16-team tournament for locally based players only is scheduled to take place between January 12th and February 4th, 2018. A CAF inspection team visited Kenya earlier this month and found that only one of the four venues was ready to stage the event. Some CAF officials in Accra also expressed concern about the political situation in Kenya, where recently annulled presidential elections are set to be rerun next month. It is the second time Kenya has lost the right to stage an African football competition after being replaced by South Africa as 1996 Africa Cup of Nations hosts. CAF says a bidding process for new hosts to replace Kenya will be opened immediately. In other CAF decisions on Saturday, they announced that for now, Cameroon will remain as host of the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations. Egypt has replaced Zambia as hosts of the 2019 Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations, which doubles as qualification for the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games. Zambia withdrew as host of the 8-nation competition on financial grounds. In more football news, Mamelodi Sundowns' defense of the African Champions League title came to an end in Morocco as they lost on penalties to Wydad Casablanca. The South African side lost the second leg 1-0 to make it 1-1 overall to force the spot kicks. Wydad now face USM Alger, who progressed on their away goals rule after a 1-1 aggregate draw with Mozambique's Beira. Egypt's Al Ahly won 2-1 in Tunisia over Esperance to advance 4-3 on aggregate. And in the African Confederation Cup, FUS Rabato Morocco defeated CX Sfaxien on penalties on Friday to advance to the semi-finals. The Moroccan club secured the win despite losing the second leg 1-0 in Tunisia, a result which leveled the quarter-final aggregate score at 1-1. FSU then seized their place in the last four with a 5-4 victory on penalties. FUS will be away to title holders at TP Mazembe of DR Congo or Al Hilal Obeid of Sudan next weekend in the first leg of the semi-final. Mazembe hold a 2-1 lead from the first leg in Sudan as they prepare for their Sunday's home leg in Lubumbashi. In other games, winger Thusho Fala scored twice to help SuperSport United of South Africa overcome Zesco United and reach the African Confederation Cup semi-finals for the first time. His stoppage line equalizer salvaged a 2-2 draw away to the Zambian side in Indola on Saturday. In the other games, Tunisia's Club Africain host Mamelodia Alger of Algeria trailing 1-0 from the first leg. In athletics, Eliud Kipchoge has won the BMW Berlin Marathon. The Kenyan won the race a Sunday in 2 hours, 3 minutes and 33 seconds to regain his title. Ethiopia's Gule Adola followed just 14 seconds later, clocking 2:03.46 to move straight to 7th on the world all-time list. Adola took the bronze medal at the 2014 World Half Marathon Championships and went on to win in New Delhi later that year in 59.06, and earlier this year he won the Rome Half Marathon in 59.18. Ethiopia's Mosnet Geremew, competing in just his second marathon, finished strongly to take third place, with Felix Kandei fourth and Kipruto holding on for fifth. In the women's race, Kipchoge's compatriot and fellow 2015 Berlin Marathon winner Gladys Cherono also regained her title. The 34-year-old returned from an injury-blighted 12 months to win the women's race in 2:20.23. Ethiopia's Ruchi Aga came through to take second place in a big personal best of 220.41, with another Kenyan, Valerie Ayebei, finishing third in 220.53, also a lifetime best. Finally, in boxing, 33-year-old WBA, IBF, WBO light heavyweight champion Andre Ward announced that he's retiring from boxing. Ward is unbeaten with a record of 32 wins with 16 knockouts. And that's it from this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Make me go the place for real. maradhi matuso none kapo kwangu simanzi ai tatoki donda chako kwangu maradhi oyani sonone kapo kwangu simanzi kwa mahabauloni pa nimenogewa vurugu patashika ai punguza kidogo na mengine kadhalika toto si unanielewa apo apo liposhika ukiongeza kidogo uweza kutongua sweetie sweetie.
I'm gonna make you mine.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The 72nd session of the General Assembly opened its general debate last week, and the debate will continue this week. Many African heads of state and government have already spoken before the General Assembly. Most of the member states who have spoken have stressed the importance of multilateralism in tackling complex international crisis. In this regard, they feel that the United Nations should play a vital role. The African states have stressed also that reform should be a major concern this year, particularly because of the new Secretary General's Guterres reform proposals which were tabled in this session. But before that, one should take note of the fact that all member states have spoken about the crisis in the Pacific involving the attempt by North Korea to strive to be considered a nuclear weapon state. All member states criticize North Korea for these efforts and the testing of missiles and weapons. But they stressed that the problem could only be resolved by negotiation and not by war. Coming to reform, it should be noted that the idea of reform has always been before the United Nations, going back even to 1946. The first effort at reform was led by Latin American states who then enjoyed a significant number of members in the General Assembly. They and other small and medium-sized states wanted the abolition of the veto enjoyed by the five permanent members of the Security Council. Despite their efforts, they were unsuccessful to do so. In the 1960s and early 70s, when a large number of African states joined the United Nations, they tried to refocus the attention of the United Nations in three areas. One, the end of colonialism. Two, the end of apartheid and racism. And three, economic development of their countries. While they largely succeeded in the first two goals, they have difficulties in having the UN play a critical role on economic development. Now, in this session, when all member states were talking about reform, one must note the difference in emphasis. Most of the major countries, when they talked about reforms, wanted to emphasize the issue of cost-cutting in the secretariat and reform of the various departments as, in fact, prescribed in the Secretary General's report on reform. The majority of African and small states have a different emphasis. Their emphasis on reform is on the Security Council. They are asking for the council to be reformed to make it more legitimate and not to allow the concentration of power by the five permanent members of the United Nations. In this regard, one must bear in mind that the Africans have been calling for an addition of two permanent members to the Security Council along with new non-permanent members. In a sense, both small and medium-sized states have been calling for the additional of five permanent members. Thus far, the five permanent members have resisted any major change of the Security Council. So these two focal differences about reform should always be borne in mind. The debate will continue this week. It will be advisable for Africans to pay attention to two critical statements by the President of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, and the President of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. And in these speeches, they touch on very crucial issues, and it will be advisable for Africans to read fully the text of these two statements. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Tiang Wang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, never underestimate the power of stupid people in large numbers. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his September 19th address to the UN General Assembly, President Donald Trump stressed the United Nations' success depends on a coalition of strong and independent nations that embrace their sovereignty to promote security, prosperity, and peace for themselves and for the world. We do not expect diverse countries to share the same cultures, traditions, or even systems of government, said President Trump. But we do expect all nations to respect the interests of their own people and the rights of every other sovereign nation. Strong sovereign nations let diverse countries with different values, different cultures, and different dreams not just coexist, but work side by side on the basis of mutual respect, said President Trump. Strong sovereign nations let their people take ownership of the future and control their own destiny. And strong sovereign nations allow individuals to flourish in the fullness of the life intended by God. The United States, said President Trump, does not seek to impose its way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example for everyone to watch. The U.S. Constitution, the oldest in the world, marked its 230th anniversary this month. This timeless document, said President Trump, has been the foundation of peace, prosperity, and freedom for the Americans, and for countless millions around the globe whose own countries have found inspiration in its respect for human nature, human dignity, and the rule of law. America does more than speak for the values expressed in the United Nations Charter. Our citizens have paid the ultimate price to defend our freedom and the freedom of many nations, said President Trump. After the U.S. and its allies emerged victorious from the bloodiest war in history, they did not seek territorial expansion or attempt to impose their way of life on others. Instead, said President Trump, we have helped build institutions such as the UN to defend sovereignty, security, and prosperity for all. We want harmony and friendship, not conflict and strife. We are guided by outcomes, not ideology. We have a policy of principled realism, rooted in shared goals, interests, and values. This is our hope, said President Trump.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.